Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello and welcome. Feroz Dada was a highly successful international tax consultant and an entrepreneur when a spiritual master appeared in his life, turning his world upside down and setting him on a mystical path of self-discovery filled with startling experiences, which resulted in him becoming a meditation teacher, a charity founder, a producer, interviewer, and author of two best-selling books, the first of which, Children of the Revolution, A Spiritual Journey to Burma and Buddhism, had the rare honour of being endorsed by His Holiness, the Dalai Lama. Feroz Dada joins me today to discuss some of the extraordinary encounters, insights, synchronicities, and lessons he learned about faith and spirituality on his transformational journey to find the truth of his soul, which he shares in his latest book, A Disciple, The Spiritual Path to Infinite Happiness. Feroz Dada, welcome.
Thank you, Sandy. Thank you again for having me on your show. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Now, your book, A Disciple, The Spiritual Path to Infinite Happiness, it chronicles a life-changing voyage that led you all over the world to the shrine of the Virgin Mary near Ephesus in Turkey, to a monk in a remote monastery near the Shan Hills of Myanmar, to the tomb of the first female Sufi saint in Jerusalem, the King's Chamber in the Great Pyramid of Giza, and to a frightening encounter with and healing from cancer. But it all started when that spiritual teacher that you hadn't known you were seeking showed up in your life. The fact is he showed up a long time before in your life, but you didn't recognize him as such for around 15 years. So tell us a little bit about that.
You began, Sandy, with the words, when your life is upside down. It reminds me of a quote from Rumi, and I think that really shows quite a lot about the journey itself. Rumi said, when your life is turned upside down, how do you know that the side down is not going to be better than the side up? And so you see, when your world is turned upside down, in my case, certainly, it's the most beautiful awakening. It is genuinely the world being changed. Shall I mention how the journey began?
Please do. Please just tell us a little bit about that before we move on to the journey itself.
When I was a young person, I read Rumi and how he met his master Shams, and how Shams, the great teacher, Rumi's teacher, changed him. I thought this was a myth, a fable. But one day in my office in Mayfair, this man arrives. He's a very successful businessman. And I had some meetings with him, and I realized that something was happening beyond the tax planning meetings. I was beginning to feel elated. I was beginning to feel energized, joyful. And this feeling lasted for days, maybe longer. So one day I asked this man, I said, look, besides being a successful businessman, what do you do? And he said, I am a spiritual teacher. I trained in the Sufi tradition, but now my teaching is open to everybody, irrespective of religion. And I began to feel that there was something happening here. There was some proof behind my feelings. So I said to him, teach me, you know, take me on as a student. And I remember he looked at me, smiled, and said, Feroz, you're not ready yet. And that was almost 20 years ago.
And then later on, just as you were then, planning a trip to Burma.
Yes.
He surprised you.
So then he made me wait for 5 years. You know, we meet and I tell him, please, please, you know, can you take me on? And he said, not really. Now, just in retrospect, I can say the reason for this waiting is to create a yearning, first of all. The yearning has to be strong enough to stay on the path. A bit like a bow that leaves the arrow that leaves the bow. It has to be in perfect flight. And the master, a spiritual master, can see that in a student at a vibrational level, whether this person is ready. Because if you start the journey without being fully ready, you can fall off the path. And so he called me up and said, Rose, I see a natural growth in you. I can see that you're ready to make this journey. And I said, well, what do I have to do? He said, nothing. I will just give you a short meditation to do. And you're on your way. But let me tell you, he said, this is a path of roses. But roses have thorns. Now, I didn't know what he meant by that. But as the path began to unravel, I realized the path was also fragrant of roses, but it also had hurdles to cross and challenges to overcome. So, of course, it was the very next day that we went to Myanmar in Burma, and the whole world turned upside down.
You were going there on a family visit, and then, I mean, we have discussed this in a previous interview, but just for those who don't know the story, just briefly tell us what happened in Burma.
So we were traveling on this beautiful lake called Inle Lake. So anybody who was able to go to Burma, Myanmar, which for the moment is closed because of the civil war that's taking place, it's a very beautiful place. And Inle Lake itself is most enchanting. It's one of the biggest lakes in Burma, surrounded by the Shan Mountains. And it's really isolated. And we were in a place where literally there are virtually no human beings, just animals, birds. And from a beautiful, sun shining day, the weather changed. There was thunder, there was lightning, and the boat, which was a canoe, was going to sink. That's what I thought. And so I urged the boatman, please take us to the shore, let's take shelter until the storm passes. And so we made our way there, and I remember there was a monastery just within sight, within distance, and we rushed to the monastery. And there at the door of the monastery was a monk, a Buddhist monk, a tall man in a saffron robe, almost as though he was waiting for us. I know it sounds absurd, but it seemed as though he was waiting for us. And as we began to walk towards him, he said, please come in and let me give you some tea and you can rest for a while until the storm clears. Now, he was speaking in Burmese. My wife is Burmese, so they were beginning to talk to each other. But I observed, I was watching him. And I have to tell you, this is the second time in 2 days that I'd meeting another most extraordinary person. I saw something in him which is remarkable. So not only was my spiritual master set me on this course, but the next day, literally, I meet this monk. And I'm waiting for something to happen. And he says, let me show you around the monastery. And he took us outside. The sun came out, of course. Was beautiful, and there were hundreds of children, probably 300, 400, 500 children, just chattering away, you know, from the age of probably 6 months or 1 year to the age of 18. And they all seemed to be chatting, and the monk said, go and speak to them in English, tell them who you are. And as soon as I began to talk to them, I realized something extraordinary was happening at this remote monastery in one of the most remote parts of the world. These children had nothing. Actually, they were the poorest of the poor. Nevertheless, there was a radiance shining through them, a happiness which was overwhelming, actually. I looked in wonder. I looked and said, who are these children? These are not our children, the children we have in the West. They're extraordinary children. And I remember then this, and as we began to leave the monastery, the monk sort of, you know, if you're a fishing man, he sort of put his rod across and put the line out and said to me, "Feroz, what do you think? What did you think of the children? What do you, you know, do you have any suggestions?" And I remember sometimes your mind and your tongue is not connected. Your heart and your tongue is connected. And I said, "Oh, I wish these children had computers." I don't know why I said that. Please, you don't ask me. And he looked at me, I remember, and he smiled and said, "Computers? They haven't seen a computer. And there is no electricity here." So I felt a little bit ashamed. But of course, in 3 months' time, my wife, Mumu, and I came back to the monastery with a boat full of computers and solar panels. And so began our journey 12 years ago.
And you created a charity, and you have helped that community become self-sufficient.
Yes, I mean, the adventures in fulfilling the challenge, if you don't mind, I just tell a quick story. It is, again, this thing happening with synchronicity, you know. I remember after 2 or 3 years of working with the monk, him teaching me meditation, and I was trying to help him with my business skills. I remember one day he said to me, "Feroz, you know, I'm teaching you Buddhism, I'm teaching you meditation. You have skills which are worldly skills, which I don't have. Can you suggest some ideas how we can transform this place?" Now, by that time, I think there were 700 children. Now we have 1,200 children. But so I said to him, in my sort of business mind, I said to him, "Give me one day of observation and ideas." And I went around the monastery land, I remember, alone, thinking of things. And the usual obvious things came to mind, like, should we make this into a meditation center or a spa or a, you know. But I knew that or set up a store selling honey and soaps and whatever. But I realized that that was not really a Buddhist type of activity to get the tourists there and make it into a commercial center. So I realized that was the right thing to do. Then walking further away from the monastery, I saw this waterfall, a stream of water falling through from the hill into the ground and then making its way, like a stream of water. And something happened. Something just clicked in my head. I went running back to the monk and said, "I think we've got it. I think we've got it." He said, "What is it for us?" I said, "We're going to create a mineral water factory. The children can drink good water," because now this time they were drinking lake water, which is dirty and was making them really ill. "And then we'll sell the extra water, bottle it, and sell it to the tourists, which come to the hotels, you know, 50 kilometers from here." And I remember he smiled at me and he said, "That's a wonderful idea for us. It fits in with the Buddhist philosophy, because in Buddhism, providing water is one of the most sacred things you can do to a human being." anyway, when I mentioned this to other people, they said, you must be crazy. How are you going to have a water factory when you have no electricity? You're several hundred miles away from anywhere near civilization. How are you going to create a water factory? Anyway, through coincidences, call it what you may, through amazing events, within 2 years, I think it was August, 20th of August, 14th of August, something like that, 2014, we opened the doors to a brand new mineral water factory. And we called the water Koye water, which means novice monk water.
Beautiful story. Beautiful story, yeah. Which is told in your book, Children of the Revolution, which is a really interesting book and has become quite a bestseller. You worked with them for some years, and then eventually Ponji, who was the head monk there, kindly released you and sent you on the next path of your journey. So then you decided to start traveling with your teacher, your master, and you had some amazing adventures. Let's talk about them. In the book, you have characteristics, words, you know, however we might want it, like humility and unconditional love and things, the kind of things that we all are seeking, as your chapter titles. So tell us a little bit about your understanding of unconditional love that came to you in Jerusalem, in the holy city.
I remember that I was with my master and a few other students, that particular point really is more about the opening of the path. So what my teacher was trying to teach me in Ephesus, and the spiritual teaching is experiential rather than just words, because with words, you know, Sandy, and I know, particularly reading books, it's great you read a book, but if you don't practice what you have read, it doesn't work. So what do you, I'll tell you the story, which if you don't mind, I'll tell you that story, and not exactly the unconditional love, which we'll come to later on in a minute. So what he said to me is, I remember we were sitting around the table, I was very excited, and I began to talk too much, probably, while the other students were quiet around me. And then I realized, why am I talking and the others are not talking? And before I could really say something or do something, my teacher turned around and said to me, Feroz, you are a new student on the path, and it's your first trip here. I want to talk about two things. I want to talk about silence, and I want to talk about humility. Now, obviously, he'd seen something in me which needed, that I needed to be taught that lesson. So I felt really embarrassed and kept quiet. Then suddenly he turned around, he looked at me and he said, Feroz, every morning, and this was, we were in a hotel, so hundreds of guests around at the dining table and breakfast table, said, every morning I want you to go and kiss the hands of two people I choose. You are to go and kiss their hand. Now, look, I'm not a young man. And I said, surely it doesn't mean that I have to go and kiss somebody's hand. I mean, it's really quite humiliating. And I was about to say something, but I just held back, thinking maybe he'll forget about it in the morning. Next morning, he hasn't forgotten. He said, Feroz, this person, the complete strangers, by the way, go and kiss their hands. And I did that. Now, what lesson did I learn, Sandy? And I remember this every time there's a question of humility. I realized that humility has to be tasted. You have to have that experience. And you know, in the old days, he would have sent somebody to a monastery or a charity and made them clean the floor for 6 months. But with spiritual teaching, if the student is able to just take this much as enough for him to learn, he was giving me a sweet lesson of humility, saying, I think you will understand. A taste is enough for you. Go and do it. And then I realized that actually it is so important that every time my ego begins to move in the wrong direction, I'm reminded of this experience. I will never forget it.
How long did it take you of kissing people's hands to really get it?
I think it was actually the process leading to the kissing of the hand, because people's hand I kissed, they were very amused and very, you know, they're actually amused and were kind. And one or two people asked, and I said, look, I'm doing this because my master asked me to do it. So nobody was impolite, or it was taken in very good stead and very good. So the learning really wasn't the process of kissing hands, which was the time between him telling me to do it and the next morning. Because those thoughts were coming to me, saying, you know, how can I go and kiss somebody's hands? You know, how demeaning is this? And so on. Anyway, which is an amazing lesson to learn. So what he told me, if you look at it in retrospect, the two conditions, in a sense, of walking the spiritual path. One is a requisite, a prerequisite, and the other one is a hurdle, I would say. So the prerequisite is silence. And silence, I mean, from the very basic way of sitting quietly, observing, being aware of yourself, or silence in meditation, silence in contemplation. Great things are achieved through contemplation. Great messages. So silence is a prerequisite to begin to travel on this path. And the biggest hurdle is your ego. The ego stops you because it comes in your way. Like my master saying, go and kiss the hand of these people. And of course, my ego was hurt. And you get that feeling. Once you realize that feeling of the ego rising, every time it begins to rise in your lifetime, you say, oh, this is the ego. I'm reacting because it's my ego that is hurt, not because what is being said to me or done to me. It is my ego. Yeah. And so these are the two, in a sense, he was teaching me on day one, the absolute starting point of the spiritual path, silence and humility, without which you can't travel very far.
Yeah. You also had an encounter with Mother Mary in Ephesus, where you also learned a bit more about humility.
Remind me.
I've got a note here where she spoke to you and said that humility is the biggest challenge that human beings encounter on the spiritual path.
Which is what you just said. The biggest. Yeah. And then I said, well, how do you get humility? And he said something really amazing. He said, look, we are at Mother Mary's house. It's through the pain that Mother Mary felt for her son, Jesus. That is humility. Seeing and feeling the sorrow and the difficulty, and that is humility. And then he goes on, I think such a beautiful way. If you have a page I can look at, it's beautiful.
I don't have the page, but I do have a little bit of a quote here. But it may not be the one that you're looking for, when your teacher said that you simply have to surrender to the experience to accept whatever comes our way.
Oh, wow. So you've nailed it, Sandy.
Is that it?
Well, see, if we are talking about this type of concept, I think there are three aspects to further aspects of spirituality which we encounter on our daily life as well. And I keep saying to my students, I say to them, don't think spirituality is just about discovering yourself, going inside, sitting for meditation. It actually helps you in your everyday life beyond what you can believe. And I gave them a few examples, being what we talked about, silence and humility, but also patience. Patience is so underrated. You know, patience teaches you. What does it teach you? It teaches you tolerance. Mm. It teaches you not to react. But in tolerance, you can withstand things, don't you? To be tolerant, you have to withstand a lot of things. And be patient. That makes you stronger as a human being in practical day-to-day life. See, our ego comes into the question of patience, Sandy, doesn't it? Because what happens is that our ego says, I want to respond. I want to get it over with. I want to confront this person. Oh, I can deal with it. So I feel better for it. That's the ego speaking. I feel better for it. But if you're patient, what happens? You suffer at this moment. At that moment, you suffer. You feel, I want to say something, but you're keeping your ego in check until such time, the right time, in the right way, at the right moment, you express yourself or do what you need to do. That's what patience teaches you. It teaches you wisdom beyond anything.
So it teaches you when to take action, the right time to take action.
Yeah. And people think being patient is a sort of passive thing. It's far from passive. It's the most active step you could take in your life. It is underrated beyond. Mm. So when you're in meditation, when you learn to be in the moment, learn to be mindful, that gives you patience. It gives you patience. Teaching, like my Ustad teaching me, made me patient, made me realize to be tolerant. The other thing you mentioned, Sandy, is acceptance. Mm. Acceptance. I remember Rumi's quote pops into my head. He said, the moment you accept what troubles you have been given, the door will open. You see, may I ask you, Sandy, what you think acceptance does? So I can have a sip of water.
I would say I don't know if this is the kind of answer you're looking for, but I would say that it is a surrendering, a letting go of expectations. Being with the moment, with what is right here, right now.
So the pragmatic part of your answer is that once you accept something, then you begin to take action. Mm. See, people get stuck in this void because they don't accept. Once they accept, the door opens up, as Rumi said, which means you can start acting, getting things right, fixing it, whatever it is it needs. And with that action comes outcome. Mm. This is a pragmatic point and not just a spiritual point. It makes your life easier. From a spiritual perspective, what is happening? From a spiritual perspective, a human being's sight is limited to what is happening at that point in time, isn't it? If you say something to me which I find rude, all I can think at this moment is, oh, she makes me annoyed. But maybe what you've said to me in time will resonate, will make the truth appear. So what I am trying to say is it is better to accept, because our capacities to see the long-term effect of what is happening is unknown. Mm-hmm. And in my book, I say a person who wins the lottery, and everybody goes, ha, 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 how so lucky. I wish I had 34 million. I do this, I do that. My life would change. Little do they know that most lottery winners are miserable. then they destroy the light. So what looks like a gift is trouble, and what looks like a blessing, what looks like trouble, can be the biggest blessing in your life. I think you and I know both that, you know, for example, I had cancer, and at that moment, I thought it was very difficult. But once I accepted it, I accepted impermanence. I accepted change. My life opened up. But you can wallow in this for a long time. So acceptance, as you said, does that. May I carry on?
Well, we're going to just take a short break. So hold that thought and we'll be right back. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer and my guest is Feroz Darda, whose latest book, A Disciple, The Spiritual Path to Infinite Happiness, chronicles his extraordinary journey from international tax consultant and entrepreneur to meditation teacher, interviewer, producer, and best-selling author. We'll be back with more from Feroz Darda after the break.
OM Times TV. Imagine becoming a super influencer. Reinvent yourself, invest in your brand, and then manifest your success with a robust, spheric approach. OM Times Media and Broadcasting offers a unique and multifaceted way to become the spiritual and conscious influencer you deserve to be by putting your message across our powerful platform with its proven record of integrity and excellence. Through our produced shows, OM Times offers the opportunity to become a social media TV personality, a radio show host, an OM Times magazine columnist, and a syndicated podcaster, all in one shot. By live streaming your show on OM Times TV and broadcasting it across the extensive OM Times radio and TV networks, you become more than a host. You become an ambassador and a force for positive change. OM Times. Open yourself to the possibilities.
If I could be you, and you could be me for just 1 hour. If we could find a way to get inside each other's minds. Walk a mile in my shoes. Walk a mile in my shoes. Well, before you abuse, criticize, and accuse, walk a mile in my shoes.
Welcome back. Feroz Darda, I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about what you learned from your experience in the Holy City in Jerusalem, and also when you went to Assisi as well.
So now I can answer your question about unconditional love. I was looking, I want to tell you how I got to Assisi, because that is part of that so-called coincidence, if you like, that been driving this journey. In my book, I'm introduced to the Sylvan Healing Sanctuary in London. Firstly, to make a film about, you know, what healing is about and how these healers work and how spiritual energy works. And I was so happy because they opened all the doors for me, really fast-tracked me through all their knowledge and all their processes so that I could make a fully informed film, which is on YouTube and can be seen. Then when the film shooting finished, one of the healers, who is also a medium, and our great friend Craig Weebuck, he said, "Bruce, come, Dr. Bowers wants to thank you." So I looked at him and I said, "Dr. Bowers?" He said, "Yes, he's my spirit guide. He wants to thank you for what you've been doing." So he takes me into the healing room, he touches my heart like this, and I fall into a trance. He falls into a trance, and then Dr. Bowers comes through. And he says, "Feroz, you have many questions you want to ask spirit, please ask them." Of course, when you're in that sort of surprise. You have many thoughts, but they're not quite in the right order. Anyway, I asked a lot of questions about spiritual life and what it is like once you pass and so on. Then when this sort of, it was a conversation. And when this conversation finished, he said, Feroz, you're looking for Saint Francis of Assisi. I was surprised. Now, I had been researching Saint Francis, partly because we have a home near his monastery in Tuscany, and I spend a lot of time with my meditation there. But so I was always interested. And here are the words he said. He said, we will help you, Feroz. We will help you find Saint Francis. I said, how? He said, we will help you find Saint Francis. Okay, so meeting over, I go home. Next morning, I'm sitting in meditation. And suddenly I hear a voice, you know, the voice that you hear all the time, Sandy, that inner voice saying, Lucio Simbrano, Lucio Simbrano. Who is this Lucio Simbrano? Then I racked my brains, and I remember I'd met a priest who conducted a friend's wedding some 6 years ago. And then the story unfolds, and I find myself in very short time at the Archbishop's home in Assisi, in Italy. And of course, his home is where Saint Francis gave up his worldly goods. He gave up, he took his clothes off, is the famous story, and said, I don't want anything. I just want to be with God. Now, what was he doing at this time? He gave away all his worldly things, including his clothes he was wearing. He was expressing unconditional love. Saint Francis was acting in a way, expressing unconditional love. He wanted nothing from this world, nothing, not even the clothes he was wearing, just the love, in this case, for Jesus. And we know the rest of his life, how amazing it was. Mm. And then, of course, the Archbishop and I sat for meditation. Look, I'm a Muslim, born a Muslim, and I was doing Sufi meditation, and he is a Catholic priest. We sat together, did meditation together, and then he came out of meditation and said, Feroz, that was beautiful. Thank you. And he wrote to me the next day and told me so. But he didn't let me go. He took me to his study and he started singing this beautiful song that he'd composed. I am for you, you are for me forever. Meaning, and then went higher and higher into a frenzy. It was a beautiful moment. Within 2 hours, I think we made a relationship and a bond between two spiritual people speaking soul to soul. We were speaking a language of souls, not a language of tongues. The point is this, that unconditional love is not a bargain. Sadly, love has become a bargain now. A transaction,
yeah, mm-hmm.
in this world, in this way of living, everything requires a response. You know, I give you this, or I look after you, so you look after me, or you give me this. And the fact that unconditional love really needs to be expressed, that is true compassion. That is true compassion and true love, not a bargain. Saint Francis, as was Mother Mary, expressed, as was Rabia al-Basri in my trip to Jerusalem.
The Sufi said, saint.
Yeah, the Sufi. What did she say? She said, if I love you because you, God, will take me to heaven, I don't want your love. Mm. If you, God, if you avoid my going to hell because I love you. Put me to hell. I just want to love you for yourself, for your beauty. And it is important, again, in pragmatic everyday life, that we express love unconditionally. Once you attach conditions to love or expectations to love, I think we lose the plot.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think whenever we attach expectations to anything, we lose the plot. Yeah. So you've said in the book that every single encounter brought you closer to the voice of your soul. As you walked the path, it took you far away from what you had been living into something completely different. Yeah. When you look back over that, obviously you've learned so many things. And, you know, every single chapter tells us one of the things that you learned and has some wonderful stories with it. What is the most important, if there was one thing that you think we all should learn, what would it be?
Okay, we talked about patience, we talked about unconditional love, we talked about acceptance, which is very important. But probably the most difficult one, and probably the most important thing, but one shouldn't make, because they're all important, is overcoming fear. See, fear is something which taints our every action. We can't lose fear completely because it's necessary for our own protection. But it is the fear of losing our worldly life, our worldly goods, our worldly possessions, our family, and our own life at the end of the day. We are ruled by this fear of losing this earthly existence.
Yes.
It controls us. Mm-hmm. It stops us from being a free spirit. Now, that doesn't mean one has to go and be careless. This is not what I mean. It means not to fear things that come in your way. It's not good by fearing the cancer I got. It wouldn't have helped me in any way. Far from it. It would have dragged me down. Fear, even about losing your life. Once you conquer the fear of losing your life, everything opens up for you. Because if you have a true understanding or true belief that your soul is on an infinite journey, and our body is only a finite encounter, so there's no point in clinging to our possessions, clinging to our things and the worldly things, except the fact that this is only one small part of a learning journey, and the soul will continue. And I would say the soul will also come back in another human form as we evolve. In other words, reincarnation of some type. It doesn't have to be in this earthly plane, it could be in other realms. In other words, the journey of the soul is infinite. And if you can address the needs of the soul, then you will have infinite happiness. This is what I mean by infinite happiness. Yes, I don't mean, and people say, oh, well, happiness, infinite happiness, what does it mean? I said, it's not the happiness of going on a holiday and having a few drinks. Sure, that's great pleasure and we should enjoy it, of course. But infinite happiness is the happiness of the soul. And the soul is infinite and happiness is infinite. So in a sense, that is really what the message is.
You were taught Buddhist meditation by Ponji, the head monk at the monastery, and you were taught Zika meditation by your teacher. What is the difference?
You know, one thing I realized that knowledge and wisdom can come from anywhere. We tend to sort of go down one avenue. So if you're a Buddhist, you just want to do Buddhist things, in a sense. But I realize that actually there are many different ways of doing meditation. But there are two profound differences in the Buddhist meditation and the Sufi meditation. The Buddhist meditation, in a sense, is a meditation of the mind, to keep the mind peaceful, to keep mind clear, keep yourself calm, be aware of what is happening around you, be mindful, be in the moment, and allow your senses of smell, touch, and your mind cognition all to be honed in perfection or near perfection. It is a meditation of the mind. The Sufi meditation is a meditation of the heart. It awakens other facets that we possess, which we neglect actually, which is intuition, perception, consciousness. So both these meditations have a slightly different aspect to it, yet they are the same actually. So in my journey, both with my spiritual master and my monk, I realized actually you can create meditation, which I have done in my book, which is both a meditation of the mind and a meditation of the heart. And then I think you really begin to experience something quite phenomenal. I would call it a fusion meditation, but very difficult for me to get to that stage because of the psychological impediment. Because everybody said to me, my Buddhist teacher said, oh, you have to just do it this way, to just do it this way. And the Sufi man saying, you just got, but I realized, no, you can create something quite special by taking bits of it, of both of them, and fusing them together. So I'm very fortunate to have been blessed beyond blessed by two or three amazing teachers. Of course, the other one being Joan Fountain.
Joan, yes, I was going to ask you about her. One of the things, we don't have an awful lot of time left, but one of the things that, she co-founded the Sylvan Center. One of the things that you write about is some words that she channeled on truth. Oh. Now, truth is something that I think we're all seeking. I don't think many of us get to know whether we've ever really found the definitive truth, or even if there is a definitive truth. So tell us what she taught you about truth.
So the point is, what is truth? I think truth in the way I understand it means trying to find out the truth of our existence as a human being. Me, Feroz, you, Sandy. If you go deep enough, you may realize the purpose of your reason in this lifetime. The truth of your existence is the purpose of why you've come to this earth. It may be to teach meditation. Of course, it's all to do with learning and progressing, evolving as a human being. But there is a path that is laid out for you if you can find that path. And even psychologists will tell you that if you find your path, you find your purpose in life, it is much more meaningful.
I understand that, but why, if I'm an infinite being, why do I need to evolve as a human being?
Yes, but an infinite soul has to perfect itself. And it perfects itself through incarnations and through experiences and learning. Like everything else, every person has to learn. This is the journey of the soul, a journey of learning. You can only learn, in a sense, if you know what you are here to learn, which is the truth of your existence.
Okay, but if the purpose, my soul, is to perfect myself, what happens if and when I do perfect myself.
So then you get to the next level of your journey. The journey is infinite.
The journey is infinite. You see,
if it is infinite to the extent that we have a very limited understanding, we have a very limited understanding of our reason on earth and the reason for existence. These are pushing the boundaries, Sandy, of understanding, because God or the creator or the divine is infinite. Is it beyond comprehension? You just have to look at the sky and you might get an inkling what the hell's going on. You're only tiny specks trying to make sense of our tiny little existence. But if we do make sense of our existence and our purpose, it is only going to help us in this life.
Do you feel that you've done that? That you understand your purpose?
Well, from when I was young, people used to make fun of me because I'd say, oh, why am I here? This used to be my normal thinking. Even when we used to go to the pub trying to chat to women, I used to say, why am I here? I don't mean the pub, but you know, why? Mm. So this is what we call seeking. You know, Sandy, your own journey is seeking. And then suddenly you find yourself in the right place on the path. You get off the path sometimes. I'm certainly in a better place than I was a long time ago. I certainly feel I'm in the groove, if you want to put it this way. But the journey is endless. The experiences are endless. It's a beautiful journey. And I would take myself to the day my ustad, my spiritual teacher, said, this is a path of roses. This is a path of roses. I remember, and in Sufism, they call it turning the heart. I know it's a strange thing. It means that you look at the world in a different way. You look at the world in a way that what the world wants from you rather than what you want from the world. And suddenly everything begins to change. The whole universe conspires to be with you because you're not then acting for yourself. In a sense, you are, of course, because that's what you want. You want to do those things. You're not forced to do anything. It's just that what you want to do is different now.
So what are you going to do now? Are you going to continue having these incredible adventures and writing books about them?
No, the whole fun about this journey is you don't know what's going to happen. As you can see from the book, it's really one surprise to another. I'm going again to Egypt, to the Giza Pyramid in September. Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen?
Are you planning more books or are you going to wait and see whether something...
I have no idea. Maybe I learn to fly. But I don't know. I don't know. I don't want to write a book just for the sake of writing a book. If there's something really that I learn beyond this point that I feel I can properly share with others, then I will certainly write. But in the meantime, I'm just happy that people like you, Sandy, allow me to come and speak. You're very kind and generous. And that probably is what I need to do at the moment, is to fulfill the full potential of the book and what I have learned, not just by writing, but just also by speaking to kind people like you, you know.
Well, we're almost out of time. I wonder whether very, very, very quickly, in less than 30 seconds, you can share a story. Because one of the things that many people get stuck in is the past. And there is a wonderful story that is told in your book about two monks, an older, more learned monk and a young novice monk who were crossing a river. And I think that is such a great story about being stuck in the past. So could you quickly tell us that before we close?
Well, no, I'm not going to do that because I'm going to ask you a question. I want to say this to you, Sandy, that having been on your program on this is the third occasion and having the great pleasure of having met you in person, I have in a
It's got to be quick.
That I would like to interview you on your program. So would you be my guest on your program?
We would have to ask our producer that, and we would have to look for a date, which wouldn't be at least until the end of the year, because the show is maxed out till then. But so I will let you know.
What I'll did I say? Patience.
Patience. There you go. Okay. Be patient, and maybe we can make that happen.
Thank you.
Feroz Dada, thank you so much for joining us today. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
So we've been discussing Feroz Dada's inspirational books, Children of the Revolution, A Spiritual Journey to Burma and Buddhism, and also A Disciple, The Spiritual Path to Infinite Happiness, which are available online and at good bookstores. For more information about the Inlay Trust charity, visit inlaytrust.org.uk, and you can learn more about the Sylvan Healing Sanctuary in London at sylvanhealing.org. That brings us to the end of this week's show. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'll be back at the same time next week with another edition of What Is Going On. Till then, it's goodbye from me.